Test 1, 2, test 1, 2. Can you type a 1 in the text if you hear me, please? Can you hear me? Thank you. Oh, good. Okay. Okay, thank you. No problem. I'm happy to fix it.
Hey, when are you ready? What? How's this? Here we go. This is a very good part of the movie. Yeah, I'll wait till after the dance. This is very cool. I just love that movie. The movie is just remarkable. It's in bits and pieces on YouTube. I don't know if the whole thing's on there, but it's worth your time. Okay, how is everybody? Hope everybody's having a wonderful week. Sorry about the little glitchy stuff. Uh-oh, I didn't start that. I didn't do that. Hey, two people in blue, how'd they do that? Oh. Okay, before we get started, first of all, I want to welcome everybody. It's wonderful seeing you all. If you have a question, now is the time to ask, or during class. Questions are wonderful. I enjoy answering them. And please don't feel shy or embarrassed about asking a question, because I've discovered over the years that there are people in here who have questions, don't want to ask them for whatever reason, and your question might be right along the lines of what they need to know. So if you got one, ask. Any questions? If not, I'm going to start. Questions are always good, definitely. What's my opinion about the Bible codes? That's a good question. The Bible codes are good. The only problem is they rushed to production because they got whatever. But every single thing in history that has happened or will happen are in Torah somewhere, somehow. It's all in there. But we seem to find it as an example. Yitzhak Rabin, his name was in there. We only discovered it after he died. Oh, sorry. So, yeah, everybody's in there and everything's in there, no question. The only thing is, I think they could have done a better job if they would have waited a little bit longer. I personally, if this is the direction you're going to go in, I personally would not study them, because they'll just make you crazy. Cool beans. Yeah, so I mean, they're there, they're for real, everything's in Torah, there's a lot of wonderful stuff, but to tell you the truth, I've taken a look at the book, but I don't study those. I'm really not interested. Yeah, tell her to hit Elisa, here. Go on the bottom of the box. Is next enter, an arrow going this way and going this way, next enter will take you right through the cycle. Go to the box and go to the bottom of the box and go left, right. And it'll take you right to the front. Sorry, we're working on sprinklers. It's summertime in California and kind of warm, so we're working on sprinklers. We cannot use it enough for seeing the future because we don't know how to interpret it. Yeah, there's a lot more truth than that. There's a lot more to that than this class is going to deal with. Okay, any other questions? Yeah, Noahide should not mess with it at all. The bottom line is, and this is again, I've said this a bunch of times, what's very true is you have seven laws. That's it. Six of them you get credit for by just being around, and the other one, whenever you vote for a judge or something like that, is when you get credit. So you really don't need to do or know a whole lot other than the seven laws. That's your responsibility. Anything else is nice to know, but it is not your responsibility. Okay? Is my drink over there? My Powerade. Did I leave it? I'm sorry, sweet pea. Okay. Any other questions before I move on? Okay. How do you know if you love yourself? Remember, dealing with... Okay. How do you know if you love yourself? First of all... What? What? What's wrong? They're hanging up in my closet. A spare key. I believe it is. It's hanging in your closet. Very nice. Okay, go look up in the closet. How do we know? The question has been asked, how do we know if we love ourselves? It's not, how do we know if? It's not how do we, well, if you take a look at your life, if you take a look at what's going on around you, how you're interacting with people, usually the people around you mirror you. So therefore, if you are surrounded with happy, bubbly people, they are mirroring exactly what they see from you. So if you have a group of people around you who are either your dear friends or family that have a very long face, a sour expression, and a snappy attitude, you might want to take a look in the mirror. So the easiest way to tell if we like slash love ourselves is look in the face of a loved one. If you are a married husband, look in your wife's face. Wife, look in your husband's face. Parents, look in your children's faces. You want to know how you're doing? We have a very, 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 very easy way of doing that. It says in Genesis, made them in his image, as in image, as in mirror. We're supposed to reflect back what we get. So that is probably my best answer. Okay? Mystery juice. No, actually, this one's a Powerade, an orange one. Okay, I do hope I answered your question. If I didn't, ask some more, I'll be more than happy to answer. Wonderful. I mean, seriously, you want to know how you're doing? Look in the face of a loved one. That's exactly how you're doing. She just said she liked me more than a whole bunch. What? Okay, guys, forget I told you that. She's so cute, that wifey of mine. She's so cute. Okay. Yeah, well, what can I say? We'll go into too much detail here. Okay. Oopsie. All right. In case you wonder where we are, we're right here in Virtual Yeshiva in the Noah chat room. We are on Chapter 11, Practices That Are Forbidden as Custom of Idol Worshippers. Ooh, this is going to be an intense one. Yummy, yummy, yummy. I went out and played golf today. My neck's a little bit red. See? Anyway, I did pretty good. Considering I'm a rookie and I don't play that often. Okay, no questions. I'm moving on. Just as Gentiles are forbidden to practice idol worship itself, so too they are forbidden to go in the customary ways of those who serve idols. Listen to this one. This one might be a little bit on the complicated side. These are ways and schemes in which the idol worshippers conduct themselves that are connected to and strengthen their beliefs. Ooh, this is going to be interesting. The following are customary roles among those who worship idols: a magician, a diviner, a soothsayer, a witch, a charmer, a medium, a wizard, or a necromancer. I'll accept on Purim. 241. I'll accept on Purim. About these it is said in Deuteronomy, "There shall not be found among you one who passes his son or daughter through a fire, a diviner, a deceitful illusionist, a soothsayer, a sorcerer, a witch, an incantationist," wow, that's a big word, "one who inquires of Av or Yadoni or a necromancer, for these are abominations to God. Anyone who does these, etc., it's forbidden." Now, here's a very interesting question that came up a whole bunch of years ago. Oh, this one came up probably 20 years ago, and I'm surprised no one here has asked the question. What about a Ouija board? How come no one asked that question? Rabbi, what about a Ouija board? Can we do that? What about tarot cards, Rabbi? What about an eight ball? You can turn it over and there's your fortune and stuff. I was asked over 20 years ago about a Ouija board. A Ouija board, isn't that how you spell Ouija? O-U something or another. Yeah, a Ouija or something like that. A Ouija, yeah. Yeah, there you go. O-U-I-J-A, Ouija or something like that. What if a dead person comes to you and you haven't called them up? Run. If a dead person walks up to me, bye. I'm not sure exactly what the question is. If a dead person comes to you and you haven't called them up, hang up. Oh, there you go. See? You guys come up with great answers. Yeah, you're telling me, hey, you looked better a few years ago. Do I believe that there are things out there that haunt, if you will, that there are things out there? Oh, thank you. Are there things out there that go bump in the night? Yeah, they are. People ask, okay. There are things that go bump in the night. There's no question about that. There are people who, for whatever reason, have left this life and have not left this, this world, if you will. Some of them are tormented souls and some of them are just don't even know they're gone. And they hang around. What is very interesting, to go into a little bit of detail on this, not a whole heck of a lot, because I don't want to scare the straights. A possum. you don't seek after those people. You don't kind of wander around and go, hey, spooky guy, what's kicking, chicken? You don't do that. We do not seek after those. You don't ask those. But they can't hurt you. Now, it might scare the poo out of you, but they can't hurt you. Yeah. Animals can see things. See, what's very interesting is there are things out there in the world that, because we have these fleshy eyeballs, there are layers between us and the rest of the world. Because we have these fleshy eyeballs, we just can't see. Are they there? Yes. Some of them are referred to as mazics. A mazic is something that does damage. Some people refer to it as a demon, but it's not in the Middle Ages sense of a demon. Holy smokes, that scared what? What was that set for? What? What's wrong with your teeth? I don't know. I don't have any idea what just happened, but it just about made me jump out of my socks. Time's up. Bye. Anyway, if you're new in this class and aren't having fun, it's not my fault. It says in the Gemara there are 1,000 mazik to my left and 10,000 to my right. Are they there? Of course they are. Do we go seek after them or dwell on them? No. Do we have something along the lines of some other faiths that go kind of bonkers with All Saints Day and All Hallows Eve and all that good junk? No. We don't believe in that. And it's nothing the righteous Gentiles should delve into. Period. Okay? Hopefully I answered your question. Hey, Jacob. Okay, no other questions? Told ya. My daughter just locked herself out of her car. So she came and got the spare key and let herself in her car. Sorry, guys, this is just like my house is, stuff's going on. So, that thing just about jumped out of my socks. Yeah, then you got distracted. Where'd you get that? What is it?
I did that.
She did that. Here. Creepy.
I love you.
Bye. Bye, kid. Man. I can't get a full head of steam up here. Whew. Yeah. She's got these mannequin heads that she's working with. She actually cuts a pretty good head of hair. So anyway, another story. Let me see if I can get going here. All right, let's turn the page to 241. You ever have one of those nights where you just can't seem to get going? I mean, you try and get going a few times, and a glitch here, a glitch there, an interruption there. Wow. Okay, let me get going. All of these practices are forbidden. It is a great sin to engage in any of them, and the court is obligated to uproot these practices from among the people. Nevertheless, since Gentiles are not warned about them explicitly, none of them are in the category of capital sins. So if you are involved in that, you are warned by the court not to do that. Okay. Two, the ancient rituals of Av and Yadoni are practices of idol worshippers. Oh, that's from Rambam. They include rituals of idol worship and sorcery and are forbidden to Gentiles. Even though they are rituals of idol worship, they do not make a Gentile liable for a capital sin because he does not do them in order to serve the demon or the spirit of the dead, which he calls upon. Instead, he performs these rituals as sorcery and for his own benefit alone. So people are like pulling a rabbit out of their hat for dinner or whatever they're doing. So what it's saying here is you're not doing it to worship something. Non-Jews that do it are doing it for their own benefit, to somehow enrich themselves. I don't know how you pull a rabbit out of your hat and enrich yourself unless you got a little granddaughter sitting near you and, you know, plop it on her lap and she starts petting it. Hi, granddaughter. Okay. You didn't think I could see you, did you? Sitting on my grandpa? Okay. What is a ritual of Av? One stands and offers a certain incense and holds a stem of a myrtle in his hand and waves it. He speaks words of magic that are known to those who practice a ritual until he, the practitioner, hears the sound of someone, as if someone is speaking to him, and the voice implies to him about what he's asking. The voice seems to emanate from under the earth in extremely low tone that is not recognizable to the ear, but only perceived in thought. Yeah, that's a person who's had a couple too many shots of moonshine. Similar to this is the ritual of one who takes a skull of a dead person and offers incense to it and then divines with it until he hears a very low voice coming from his armpit. And the voice replies to him. Don't all armpits talk to people? Hi, I'm Mr. Armpit. What? I don't know. I don't make this stuff up. I'm not making this stuff up. No, there's people believe in that. You know, here, talk to my armpit. Yeah, right. Yeah, why? I mean, I've been in a guy's locker room. I know exactly what kind of magic happens in that place. It is kind of ew. What? Yes, dear. You're talking to my armpit. Yeah. People pay money for that stuff. Aromatic. Francis, you are on a roll tonight. You are just on a roll. Francis is in a good mood tonight. Okay, what is the ritual of Yadoni? One places a bone of a certain bird named a Yadoa in his mouth. Ew. Offers incense and performs other actions until he falls down into a type of faint and a trance. The bone then speaks from his mouth about events that will happen in the future. Oh yeah, I can just see it. Grandma's kosher chicken bone in my mouth talking to me. That's all I need. Just as it is forbidden to practice the rituals of Av or Yadoni, it is also forbidden to ask such individuals to provide advice through the practice of these rituals. If one transgresses and does so, it is forbidden and act according to the advice that is received. You're going to choke her. So, I mean, if you go to a person who reads palms, you know, paint your palm red, reads palms, or does tarot card readings of the future or something like that, you're not supposed to get involved with that whatsoever. Yeah. Soothsaying. I'm sure most everybody in here knows. I don't need to go into any more detail with some of these rituals. I mean, I'm sure somewhere out there you have heard of some of these, or at least close to them. And there are people that do this. There's even faiths that dance around with reptiles and talk in other tongues that you don't understand. Man, I don't even know what to say about that. I actually know a couple people that are snake dancers. I mean, it's like creepy stuff. Yeah. There's a couple people I know that are snake dancers. I give them a wide berth. It's just like, you've been around snake dancers? Holy smokes. I've seen documentaries of it, but I haven't seen relatives who talk in tongues, no snakes, the other stuff. Oh, yeah, that's kind of, I don't even know what to say about that sort of stuff. Just don't get yourself involved in that. Do yourself a favor, okay? Oh, Gavalt. They are big in this area, both snake handlers and the tongue stuff. Yeah. Yeah. They're all over the place. And you know something? The closer we get to the time of Moshiach, the more these people are coming out of the woodwork. And the nice thing is more Jews are coming to Yiddishkeit. There are more people coming to Orthodox Judaism than ever before. There's more people studying than ever before. And it's just really wondering. It's wonderful. Just wonderful. Yeah, it's amazing. It's just amazing. And here's one thing that everybody in this room needs to understand, that there are people out there in the world who have a strong, yeah, the snake people in Kansas, that's a good spot for them. I mean, Arkansas, they're a good spot for them. One thing that's really important to understand is there are people who are going through Orthodox conversions now as we speak. And those people who are converting, I mean, it's an arduous process. It is really difficult. And there are people who feel that it's the right thing to do, so they go through it. Need to understand, in the time of Moshiach, and this is very important, people will not be able to convert. So those people out there that are Jews, and those people that are righteous Gentiles, and we get to live side by side. So that's kind of a wonderful thing. So if anybody asks you, when the Messiah comes, are you going to have to be like us? No, you will not have that opportunity, and you don't want that opportunity. Why have to follow 626 laws versus 7? You know? So I'm sure that's come up once or twice, and someone says, well, everybody's going to be a Jew when the Messiah comes? No. And you're not going to be able to convert. And that's kind of, that's an interesting thought, very interesting. And one of these days we'll go off on that tangent. Okay. Where was I? Oh, yeah, soothsaying. Soothsaying involves those who follow signs such as, since my bread has fallen from my mouth, or my stick has fallen from my hand, etc., I will not go to such and such a place today, for if I go, I will not be successful. Or, since a fox passed me on the right-hand side, I will not leave my house today, for if I do, I will meet a swindler, etc. Oh, man, I don't know how many people. I know people who do this. Oh, man, it's like, wow, you don't even want to go there. This also applies to those who listen to the chirping of birds and follow these signs, because the bird chirps this way or that way, such and such will happen and such will not. And because the bird chirps, then it will be a good to do this, but it will be a bad day to do that. Those who prognosticate by actions of a rat, birds, or signs in the heavens are also practicing soothsaying. Similarly, one who designates signs for himself by deciding that he will act in this way or that way according to what transpires before his eyes is also considered soothsaying. The only thing I've ever been able to predict in the future is if my kids didn't clean their room, their tushies would be warm. That's, I can predict the future on that one, kids. Or if you don't get in there and do the dishes, because it's your turn to do the dishes, I guarantee you're going to have a tough time sitting down. I can predict the future. Likewise, someone who tells a person that he will have bad luck unless he slaughters his rooster that called out in the evening, or his hen that made a sound like a rooster. How can a hen sound like a rooster? Don't they all just go cock-a-doodle-doo? Anybody know what you call a rooster who cock-a-doodle-doos after 12 noon? What do you call a rooster that cock-a-doodle-doos after 12 noon? Lunch. Yeah, lunch. Yeah. But people do this stuff. I mean, they hear the rooster crowing in the afternoon or whatever, and they go out there and say, this is going to be an auspicious day. No, man, that silly rooster's out doing the wrong thing. You know, chop his head off and have him for lunch. I'm on page 244. A small class tonight. Where is everybody? Like Los Angeles? Is it today the parade, or is it tomorrow? Really? What's that? My daughter was down in Los Angeles when the Lakers won. She was also there 7 years ago for the riots. No, she didn't flip over any cars. But, yeah, Los Angeles won. The hooligans out there turned over cars and set things on fire. So, you know something, what I'm going to do next year? If Tiger Woods, let's do this. If Tiger Woods wins the Masters next year, let's all go to a local golf course and turn over golf carts and tear up greens. Yay, he won! And roll over golf carts and stuff, you know, throw clubs into the lake. Set cars on fire and stuff just because someone wins a basketball game. Some people, I'll tell you what, I don't know. I didn't even get a chuckle out of that. Anybody out there? Yoo-hoo. I think they're ignoring me, sweets. She said, what? I'm ignoring you. Oh, how cool is that? Yeah. Yeah. The prohibition of soothsaying applies when one sets a sign for himself and acts accordingly, and there is no natural or logical connection between the sign and the action he chooses because of it, or the course of non-action that he chooses, and it emerges that he believes in this folly. Yeah. In contrast, one who sets a sign for himself based on logical reasoning, as Eliezer the righteous servant of Abraham did by saying, "Let it be the maiden who replies, drink and I will give water to your camels. Her will you have designated for your servant, for Isaac likewise." If a person had a certain natural occurrence from which he can logically deduce that natural consequences will be such and such, and he decides to act accordingly and not to take action, this is not considered soothsaying. So, in other words, Eliezer's servant, Eliezer Avraham Avinu's servant, who went to go find a wife for his son, went, and if you recall, he sat there and says, "If the person who comes up and gives me something to drink and waters my camels, etc., that person will be the wife of my master's son," or something that I paraphrased. And sure enough, little Rebecca did something very similar to that, and that's not called soothsaying. Hey, Taniel, has DJ finished his homework? Taniel, haven't seen you since a week before last. Glad you're here. Okay. All right. It is permitted to make statements such as, "This house that I built is a good sign for me," or "This spouse that I married is blessed, for once we married, I became rich," or "This animal that I bought is blessed, for once I purchased it, I became rich," and the like. These statements are not forbidden because by making them, one has not decided upon a course of action or refrained from doing something based on a sign. Rather, one has accepted whatever it is a good sign for what has already happened. However, it is forbidden by the prohibition of soothsaying for one to designate a sign for himself upon which he will decide upon the future action. To do this or not do that depending on how the sign turns out. Hey, DJ. DJ, is your school year over yet? Yeah. Well, how'd you do? Excellent. That's good. Read a lot over the summer. It's cool. If you got like a Barnes & Noble near you, they got like Starbucks in them, go there and you can read books for free. It's kind of cool. Have yourself a cup of coffee and go read a book. it's really a cool thing to do. Go there, sit there, and read a book. It's excellent. I go into the history section myself. I don't go into the Judaica section because they just got the creepiest books I've ever seen there. So I go and listen to a CD. I'll go into the history section and take a look at a book and go have a cup of coffee and go home. It's cool. Kind of like the library with coffee. Okay. It is permitted to ask a child who is learning the Hebrew Scriptures to recite a verse of his choice and to act upon it, since this may be considered like a type of prophecy. Ooh, this is a good one, and I don't know if you want to delve into this one at all, but I know for a fact there are people who do exactly that. I personally don't, but I do know people that do get involved with that sort of stuff, and that is not soothsaying. As far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. And unless you ask some other questions, I'm going to move on to something else. Because that sort of stuff is just, I don't want to get involved with that. It is forbidden to practice divination or to ask advice from one who practices this. Divination consists of performing particular actions in order to clear one's mind of all thoughts and matters and concentrate transcendentally until one starts predicting the future by saying, for example, such and such will or will not happen? Or is it fitting to do such and such or beware of such and such? Some diviners touch or feel stones or sands or concentrate upon this. Some crouch on the ground while moving and shouting or look like Larry and spin in circles and go, woo, woo, woo. Some stare into the mirror or lantern. Others hold a stick in their hands, leaning on it and knocking on the ground with it until their minds have cleared, and then they start speaking. This is what one of the prophets said derisively. My people counsel from a piece of wood, and their staff declares to them. There are people that do this stuff. There are just people that do this stuff. And this is stuff, okay, this would beg a question, and I'm really surprised. Again, guys, there's questions in here.
Water divine, yeah. Water divine,
yes. But there's also a question that should just hop out of your mind. What about meditation? No, dude, if my golf club starts talking, I take it to the lake and drown it. What about meditation? What about meditation? Any thoughts on that? Meditation would not be practiced for soothsaying, would it? Meditation is okay. Very good, Omar. Meditation is fine. In fact, there's a book by Arya Kaplan called Meditation. And it is a very, very good book. In fact, where is the line? That's my question. It depends actually, to be quite honest, if you read Arya Kaplan's book on meditation, here's what meditation does in Jewish thought. Meditation gives you an opportunity to just clear the mind. Of course Ezekiel did it. But Ezekiel did the kind of meditation in order to see. That's the kind of meditation that we kind of want to be aware of and stay away from. There is a way to prepare oneself and to meditate and to go take a look-see. Yeah, exactly. What about those who meditate, go into a trance, and become a conduit for a spirit to speak to them? No, 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 no. You can't do it. End of the first paragraph. My people ask counsel. Okay. On 246. Oh, clear the mind. Oh, knocking on the ground until their minds have cleared, and then they start speaking. Yeah, that sort of stuff is channeling. You don't do that. If you do meditation is okay. People who meditate have mantras, and that's what they call in the East. I just call it, what do you repeat over and over and over again? And what I do, and I did this for a very long time because it really helped me relax and helped me sleep and just helped me clear the mind, is I would say Rabbono Shel Olam over and over again. And that was exactly what I said until the mind kind of quieted down. Now, gentlemen, we have a much easier time quieting down the one synapse we have floating between our ears. Women have a much more difficult time quieting the mind down because there is a ton more stuff going on up there than we have going on in our head. So, where meditation is easy for us, I think it's a little more difficult for women. I could be wrong, though. But there is a lot more going up there than a woman. My uncle wants to know what a rabbi is. I'm sorry. He is a Christian. Hey, he can be whatever he wants. What is a rabbi? A rabbi means master or teacher. In my case, I am a teacher. I am a person who studied and has done a course of study, has received smicha, which is my, I guess you could call it in English, an ordination certificate, and it qualifies me to teach. Hey, Deborah, and that's exactly, let your uncle know, that's exactly what I do. I am a teacher. I answer questions and inform people, et cetera, et cetera. A coin flip, if you're using a flip of a coin, okay, let's suppose we're using a coin flip to start a basketball game or a football game, that's not divining. You got simply, people say it's a 50-50 chance, that's statistics. You have a chance of hitting here, actually, if I'm not mistaken, 40% here, 40% here, and a 10% shot of landing here. And people don't take that into account. This is always a chance of the coin landing on its edge, even though I can't recall when that has ever happened. That's one of the possibilities. So what you're doing is in a coin flip, if you're at the point, what about the other 10%? The other 10% are the ones who, you know, land here. If you say heads and I say tails, it lands on its side, you know, maybe everybody loses. I don't know. But that's always a possibility. If you are in a place where you have a choice of going, 40, 40, and 20, okay, you have a very small chance. Statistically, I don't remember what the number is, but you still have a chance. No, it's not, you're not beating a stick on the ground, you're not twirling yourself around until whatever. You know, you're not doing something like, if this bird flies east to west over my right shoulder, then that means I'm going to go back home because it's going to be a terrible day for me and I don't want to have a terrible day. No, we don't do that sort of stuff. Okay? But if you got a coin toss to start a game, that's not divining or anything like that. That's statistics to see who starts. You could do, you know, I mean, at that, what we do where I teach is if there's an argument between kids, we go rock, scissors, paper. That's not divining. That's simply a way to, the purpose is not to do something according to an outcome. It is a way to resolve a conflict or a potential conflict. In the case of sports, flipping a coin to decide who, what happened? You okay? To see who kicks off or who receives or et cetera, at a coin flick or rock, scissors, paper. That's not divining. Okay? Hopefully I answered your question. Okay? Does Alan have a question? Eeny, meeny, miny, moe? Yeah, same thing. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, you know, eeny, meeny, miny, one potato, two potato, rock, scissors, paper, any of that stuff is just a form of conflict resolution, and it's not considered divining. Okay? Wifey's over there doing a paper for school. Is it due tonight sometime before midnight? Yeah, they're childish games, Devorah, but they're also a way to resolve possible conflicts. Like I said, out at my school, if there's two kids that are arguing over something, let's suppose you're playing kickball, and two kids arrive at home plate at the same time to pick up the ball to kick first, or who wants to be pitcher. And they get up there, and two kids grab the ball. What I've taught my students to do is say, stop, step away, two out of three, rock, scissors, paper. And they decide either one shot or two out of three. And they do rock, scissors, paper, call it a day. Okay? The whole flipping the coin thing started a fight at my school. The whole coin started a fight at my school. Well, what happened, Tanya, is somebody probably ran by and scooped up the coin and took off with it. Yeah, you betcha it's on. I'm in Francis. Daisy Nohide. Is she, are you from France? Are you from France? Daisy, are you from France? How cool is that? Wow, how cool is that? We got people in here from France. Ah, how cool is that? Mais je ne peux parler français. Oh, she's not from France. Oh, she was talking to Francis. I get it. Oh, sorry. I had a moment. Sorry. Okay, I'm out of the conversation. Sorry. So, man. Yeah, well. Yeah. No, not Twilight Zone. Just, you know, as Devorah said, men. Okay. A deceitful illusionist... How am I doing on time? Oh, I'm doing great. A deceitful illusionist is one who deceives the eyes of others and deludes them by appearing to do a supernatural thing which he does not really do. One who performs acts of sorcery is called a sorcerer or a witch. Both these practices are forbidden. Oh, dude, you can't pull a rabbit out of your hat? That's not good. Where was I? Ah, gotcha. Well, there's, hang on a second, Steve. Personally, Penn and Teller cracked me up. I very much enjoy them. I've seen David Copperfield live a couple of times. But there is a difference. If people do things to sway or dis... What book are we in? It's called The Divine Code, right there. Okay? We'll be going into the Torah portion here in a little bit. And we were in the Book of Numbers, Parsha Shelech Lecha, which is... We're on Parsha Shelech Lecha, which, if you're curious, when I do get to it, Shelech, when I do get to the Torah portion, sorry, Daisy, in the Stone Edition Chumash, which is this one here, there, I'll do that, Gevalt, the middle fell out of it. It is on page 799. If you don't have one of those in a different kind of Bible, it is chapter 13, verse 1. And we're going to discuss that in a little bit. Okay? Yeah, sorry, Daisy. I'm kind of a mic hog for 2 hours. Okay. The gates. Done? How many pages you got? How many do you need? You're building. And then you're going to edit. Wow, I have to read it all the time. That's cool. This is my favorite class all week. I look forward to it all week. Well, you know something? I'm very touched by that. Thank you very much. I look forward to this each week, too. I mean, in case you guys can't tell, I do have a lot of fun with what I'm doing. And I do enjoy the questions, and I do enjoy the humor. I don't do one of those very sedate. I really don't do the real sedate, serious lecturer kind of thing. I think that learning needs to be done with joy because learning is a blast. I love learning. I mean, thank you. She put ice cubes in my Powerade. Wow, that was noisy. Sorry. Okay. Before I go on, any other questions? Yes, no? Yeah. Yeah. That's my email address, my wifey's email address, and Oki's email address. So if you have a question, you're more than welcome to ask any of us. Yeah, what's wrong with Penn and Teller? See, the thing is, they're not predicting the future. These people are just showmen. These people are doing, it's what they're not doing, it's not magic, you know. It's not like the great and powerful Oz, come see him and ask advice. These people are entertaining, and what they do is called, it's called magic, but it's just, yeah, it's, you know, like, it was sleight of hand, it's illusion. So it's not magic, because what they're doing is they are fleecing you by charging a ridiculous amount of money, so I suppose that's a little bit hard to swallow. But you're not doing anything that's going to bring something from another side to predict, inflict, or do something. Okay? So, no, going to see David Copperfield or Penn and Teller or any of these other guys, it's not us, sir. It's not forbidden. We got to make sure if I... Well, you know something? Not everybody does, because guess what? I like the idea of going to... I've seen David Copperfield a good time. He puts on a good show. He really puts on a good show. But he... Oh, how cool is that? That's the best magic trick I've ever heard. Dvorah's husband made a whole meatloaf disappear. Seriously, that was his magic trick. That's pretty good. Dang. Oh, speaking of meatloaf, so I'm going to take a little aside before I go into the next one. Dvorah, you know how you make the best meatloaf? Seriously, I do believe I have a system of making the best meatloaf on the barbecue. Make yourself a giant Salisbury steak, your meatloaf, and cook it on a barbecue. Okay? It takes two spatulas to flip that dude, but I guarantee, I mean, if you like grilled hamburger, you gotta try meatloaf on a barbecue. It is really amazing. Hey, Tanya, I mean, DJ, here's how you make meatloaf. DJ, listen, here's the easiest way to make meatloaf. You dice up some mushrooms, some onions, some green pepper, and you throw in some either barbecue sauce or ketchup, and a couple eggs, and whatever you want to use for filler. And you mix it up, and you make a big patty out of it. Throw it on a barbecue, put some barbecue sauce on top, cook it for about 35 minutes on one side, about 20 minutes on the other, you got meatloaf. You? Yeah, it is. Well, I just said that. Oh, you have no idea. I made manicotti last week, and we had guests for dinner. I made manicotti. I stuffed the shells myself. I stuffed it myself. I make stuffed shells. Yeah, I've just been on this real pasta kick. Lasagna, manicotti, stuffed shells. The small manicotti is like, whoa. Yeah, it is. Manicotti. Manicotti is, you take, you know, the round noodles, kind of look like a little piece of pipe about that big and about as big around as your little finger. Okay? You cook those for 8 to 10 minutes. You take them out and you drain them. And you make what, in Yiddish, they call them mishimishim. I don't know what the word is in English, but it's ricotta cheese. You put that into a bowl. You saute onions and mushrooms and garlic and salt and pepper in olive oil, and you saute it until it's all caramelized. Then you mix it in with ricotta cheese and stir it up, and take some spinach and boil the spinach and dice it up. Throw that in and mix it up. And then you take it and you squeeze it into those little noodle things. And you put them on a tray, and you put some marinara sauce on it, and you cook it. It's like killer. Oh, it's great. Omar. Yeah. Yeah, I made my wife a quesadilla for dinner. Killer, yeah. I am a cook. Ask my wife, I'm a cook. Okay. Alright. Alright, let's keep going. I need to get through about 20 more minutes before I get to the Torah portion. If you would like, get hold of your Chumash, and while I'm doing this, you can kind of follow along in the background and take a look at Parshas Shalach, which is the part where they sent the Meraglim, the spies, if you will, which are not really spies, the tourists into the land of Canaan to spy out the land, which is really it's a very interesting story. And the outcome was a little bit scary. Okay, astrology. Astrology is not forbidden for Gentiles. That is to say, to discern what is one's divine mazel, meaning a divinely planned destiny, and to proceed with an action when it is apparent from the mazel, the luck, that he will have success, or to refrain from an action when the mazel is opposing him. So guess what? If you can take a look at a star and figure out your future, have at it. It is forbidden to practice incantations. Wow. Which is uttering of foolish, abnormal words that have no purpose, and he believes in his foolishness that these things will have some effect, you know, hocus pocus, full of jokus, and someone turns into a frog. I think not. Some say that if one says these things over a snake or scorpion, that it will not be able to cause him harm, and that if one says something over a person, the person will not be harmed. There is a similar practice of one who holds a designated object, such as a key or stone, in his hand while speaking in order to project a power in his words. I just throw the stone. Project my power. Take that stone and toss it at somebody. All such practices are forbidden. Likewise, it is forbidden for a person to sit opposite an incantationist and allow the utterance to be over him, thinking that he has benefit from those incantations, for by doing so he practices in the ritual of incantation. I work with a woman that claims to be a real witch. Yeah, I know a bunch of those people too. They're called Wiccas. And they're a witch? Yeah. Oh, well. You know, when they say that, I don't even know what to say. When someone says, I'm a witch, I'd say, wow. I don't even know what to say to those people. I really don't. I really don't. It's L-I-A-R, DJ. Sorry, I'm a school teacher. What can I say? So take the opportunity to, not a problem, L-I-A-R. Liar, not liar. Am I really what? A school teacher? Yeah, I teach school. Yeah, I'm a teacher. Yeah, I'm also a rabbi. I teach. I mean, it is a dull person that only knows one way to spell a word. And he spells spell with three L's. How cool is that? No, traveled has two L's and written has two T's. Those I do every time, but I really haven't taken on the OU thing in color yet. That's just a little bit too much for me. I can't seem to remember the OU when I spell color. Yeah? Yeah. So in case you're curious, you know, all the zeros after whatever on my paycheck in here is just, you know, it's like a boon for us every month. Okay. It is permitted to whisper over the place where a snake or scorpion bit or stung a person, aside from incantations of idolatry, in order to give the injured person peace of mind and insurance and assurance. Which means if someone gets stung by a bee or something like that, and you can, you know, pet them on the head and say you won't die unless you're going to anaphylactic shock, then that's a different story. Where's your EpiPen? But as long as, you know, you're telling the person, you're comforting them, you're good to go. Do you have any idea what I, just said? Don't ask or listen to the recording. Even though this doesn't help in the slightest, it is permitted for psychological benefits because the injected poison is dangerous. So I'm sorry, dude, you got stung by a scorpion. I'll be back in a little while to help you out. So, yeah. You guys need to understand, if you don't have this book, if you look at this thing, the bottom of the page down here where the line is, these are all the footnotes that I am not reading, because you're going to have to get the book because it's your responsibility to know it. It is one of the volumes of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch for Noahides, and you need to know this stuff. This is the Kitzur. You guys understand the difference? This is the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch for Noahides. Okay. Number 13 on page 248. Oh, it's a good number. 248. What does Kitzur? Okay, there is something called a Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch means a set table. It is a compendium of laws that is very detailed. Okay? As an example, if somebody wants to know what the bracha is over wine, and you go to a book, open it up, and it tells you the bracha, the blessing over the wine. You do the blessing, drink the wine. But if somebody wants to know more details about that, is what we're supposed to do, and if it's a blessing for this, a blessing for this, a blessing for this, and all those really, really, really deep details that the vast majority of the people really don't want to know, that's the Shulchan Aruch. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is ask a question, here's your answer. Do this, don't do that. Simple. And that's what we're doing. See you, Devorah. And that's what this is all about. This is the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch that I am teaching, and it's the laws that you need to know right now today. These are important. Okay? The regular Shulchan Aruch for Noahides is not written in English, it's only written in Hebrew. And I do have volume 1 of that one. Okay? No questions? Good, let's go on. Ooh, I got to finish this one up. Likewise, one who gathers snakes or scorpions or other animals or flies or mosquitoes and the like through whispering is an incantationist and is forbidden even if his intentions are to gather them into the desert or a place where they cannot harm him. However, if they were chasing him and to harm him, it is permitted to cast a charm in order to save himself from them. So if I'm standing in my backyard and I'm saying a bunch of goofy words and all the bugs in the world come to me, that's an incantationist. But if I am walking down the street and all the bugs in the world are chasing after me and I throw a bug bomb at them and say some silly words like, don't sting me, and they all die, then I'm doing it, it's okay because they are dying. Wow, that one is one you might want to take a look at a few more times. How are the dead consulted? yeah. One practice of necromancy, necro as in dead people, is to consult them by fasting and then sleeping in a graveyard so that the dead person will appear to one in a dream to answer one's questions. There are others who consult with the dead by putting on specific clothes, burning incense, and sleeping in the graveyard alone so that the dead person will appear to them in a dream and speak to them. Creepy. The general rule is it is forbidden for one to do anything to make a dead person appear to him and answer his questions. Similarly, any scientific investigations, seances, and the like, which include communicating with dead spirits, are forbidden. So, if you got one of those crazy ghosts, you think it's a ghost running around your house, you know, just say good morning to them as you pass by and have your coffee, and say we're going to bed now, you know, have a nice, don't make a mess. Did the prophet Samuel come back from the dead? Yes. That's in the book of Shmuel, yes. Came back, told them what was going to happen, and of course he died. Yeah, I studied that with my chavrutza. That was a very interesting story. Yeah. Yep. That's what King Saul did, and he paid for it. You betcha. Exactly. What do you mean? When you leave this world, you don't come back? Sure, you come back. Dude, I want to do this E-ride again. This is good. I'm having a good time here. It's called Gilgulim, yes. You get to do it again. Most of us wouldn't like to, but I don't mind it. I'm having a good time. Well, here's the way it works, Omar, is in Jewish thought, every person is here for a purpose, to do what's called a tikkun, to elevate self to the point where your good deeds outweigh your misdeeds, and you get to stay in the hereafter, Olam Haba. But if there are issues, as an example, if a person, let's suppose these people who, in America, I think in the state of Oregon, as an example, death by doctor is legal. In other words, it is not? It was overturned? Oh, I didn't know that. Thank you for correcting me. But there are some places that the choice law where if you're, God forbid, dying of a terrible disease and you can't take the pain anymore and you pop yourself off, that is a huge sin. Suicide is a sin. And guess what? You haven't finished your tikkun or what you're here for, and you get to or have to come back and finish what you were here for. So, yeah. Do people come back? Oh, yeah. So-called euthanasia is now legal in the U.S. or not. Are there other states that permit euthanasia? I don't remember. So they are zombies? What? No. Tanya, they're not zombies. These are people who come back and do it as an example. DJ, here's an example. Noah. I'll give you two people. Noah was charged by the big guy to save the world, to save humankind. Well, we consider his best effort was to save the animals, but he was told to save people and to get them to repent from their misdeeds, and he didn't do that. So when he died, he was reincarnated in the future into a person who was charged not to save a world, but to save a people. And that was his last tikkun. Are you done? Both of them? Dude. My hero, thank you. Yes, exactly. Yeah, Moses was a Gilgul of Noah. Okay? That was the fourth Gilgul of a person. Sorry, I got a little sidetracked. Yeah. So Moses was a Gilgul of Noah because Noah was charged to save a people, to save everybody. He didn't do it. Moses was charged to save a people, and he did it, and did it successfully. Bye, Daisy. Thanks for coming in. Hopefully we'll see you again soon. Okay. Ooh, I got it going. Is the practice of idol worshippers to make a mark on themselves or to tattoo their bodies as a sign of idol worship, that is to say, to show that they are servants who are sold to the idol and marked for its service. It is also the practice to cut themselves with vessels and to wound their bodies and to scratch themselves for their idols. All these practices are rituals of idol worship, even though they are not its main rituals. They are therefore forbidden as idolatrous practices if one intends it for idolatry. It is also forbidden for one to wear a specific garment that is worn by idol worshippers in the name of their idol, or if he intends to do so for that purpose. Wow. There are people who gash themselves, cut themselves, flay themselves, and all that in the name of their belief system, and I don't need to go into any more detail. You know who some of those people are because you see them on the news periodically, all bloody mess and all that. Yeah, that's a huge no-no. That is a form of idolatry. Yeah, and you see it on the news. I mean, there are groups of people out there who walk along and just, you know, beat the living heck out of themselves with a cat of nine tails. Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, but, you know, people do that today. But, Francis, that's also called male pattern baldness. the crucifying part is in the Philippines, I think, and people have a tendency to do that there and put themselves up. Oh man, I don't even want, that's bizarre. Okay. There are those who cut their hair in ways prescribed by the practice of idol worship or shave their heads based on idolatrous practices. If one cuts his hair this way and intends it for this idolatrous practice for idol worship, this is forbidden. If he intends to do so only as a custom for fashion, then it's permitted. So if you want to make yourself a little baldy thing in the back of your head and you're doing it as a fashion statement or a place for your yarmulke to sit, you know, it's not the end of the world. You know, it's not the end of the world. But if you cut your hair in a way that would be tantamount to idolatry because other idol worshippers do the same, can't do it. Interesting, huh? You can have a mohawk if you want. I mean, other than people pointing and laughing at you, you can have a mohawk. But if you're doing it because, what? If you're doing it because it is part of the practices of, a system of worship, it's a no-no. Ooh, prohibition of swearing or vowing in the name of an idol. There's an interesting one for next week. Yeah, mohawks are back in fashion. We got a whole bunch of little kids in our school who wear mohawks, and it's just creepy. What they do at my school is they take their hair and they gel it into a point. And that's, is that called a faux hawk? I think it's called FAU, faux. Yeah, faux hawk. Yeah, it's called the faux hawk. It's kind of weird. I don't know. I don't even want to go there. No, don't show them the picture. They're in here to learn. They're not in here to be scared. Okay. Okay. Any questions on what we went over? We went over a big old honking section of this. I am going to start in with the book of Numbers, chapter 13. And unfortunately, Rabbi Sancho is not in who could call it up on the screen. So we'll just have to deal with it. So if everybody will grab their Chumash and turn to Numbers 13:1, we'll get started. Dun 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 dun. Okay. No, I don't know what link he uses. I really don't. Some Bible link. We should ask him for it next time he pops in. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Okay. Let's talk about this week's Torah portion. This week's Torah portion is in Hebrew, Parsha Shalach. Oopsie. Shalach. Or it's also known as Shalech Lecha. Okay? Maybe it's in there. I'm not sure. If Omar, if you want to check it out and give us the link, we can put it in the browser. Okay, this is a very, very interesting Torah portion because what's happening here? What I've been trying to do, DJ, is your uncle still around? DJ, is your uncle still around? Oh, DJ's not around. Okay. Let me set the stage for what's going on in this Torah portion. As we know from last week's Torah portion, Parsha Behalosecha, what we have is we have Miriam covered with tzaras from head to foot. Why? Because Miriam and Aaron spoke out against their brother regarding his separation from his wife. And we said last week that Miriam did the same thing with her brother that she did with her mom and dad. They separated for a reason. Moses separated for a reason. Ooh, paste that one up there. Okala, that's a cool name. I'm going to call her Okala. Okala. Okay. All right. Let's see if it pops up. Dun, 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 dun. Ooh. All right. Let me see what we have here. I'm going to move my smiling face out of the way. All right. Vayiver Hashem el Moshe lemor shalech lecha anashim vayaturu et aretz kanan asher ani. Okay. What is going on here? The Lord spoke to Moses. Well, God spoke to Moses saying, send out for yourselves men who will scout the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. You shall send one man from each of his father's tribe. Each one shall be a chieftain in their midst. So, Moses sent them from the desert of Paran by the word of the Lord, all of these men of distinction were the heads of the children of Israel. Now, there is a very interesting thing that's going on here. If you take a look at right here, can everybody see where I just highlighted? Can you see where I just highlighted? On Bet. And in English, it is... Okay. Okay, if I hit F3, and what will this do? F3, is that right? What just happened? Okay. Did you see it? Okay. See right, do it again. F3. Here and here. Or here and here. Okay? Did you see that, I hope? Your name needs to be, okay. Here's what I'm going to do. It says here, hang on a second. You see in 2 where it says, send out for yourself. You see that part? Where it says, and then it goes dot, dot, dot after that, dot, 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 dot. You see where it says that? Everybody got that? Follow along. Okay. Send out for yourselves. Okay. Everybody got that, I hope. Well, here's what's going on. We are on the verge. We've just received the tablets with the law. We've left Mount Sinai. We're heading towards Canaan to go into the land. Here's what's going on. We've set up camp outside the land. Miriam and Aaron both discover that Moses has not done his husbandly duties or his conjugal duties for quite some time with the wifey. And so they get upset, and Miriam speaks out against her brother, which is just the same thing that Miriam did in the beginning of Exodus when Miriam's mother and father separated because of Pharaoh's evil decree of throwing all the males into the Nile. It was a law, you have a male, throw it in the Nile. Miriam's mother and father separated and then remarried. And Moses was the product of that. Similar situation here. Miriam finds out that Moses and his wife are separated, and she tells them to get back together again. You know, goes to her brother and says, this isn't right. Did the same thing for a parent. She thought she was doing the right thing. Well, God decided to show her she wasn't doing the right thing, and so she was covered from head to foot in saras. And that's at the end of last week's Torah portion. This week's Torah portion, Moses is busy talking to God and praying for his sister's speedy recovery when all of a sudden these people walk up to Moses and they said, hey, Moses. You know, Moses is talking to God, and Moses says, hey, God, hang on 1 second. Turns around to this stack of people, and this stack of people say, hey, we want to go send some people in to go check out this land flowing with milk and honey. And Moses goes, hey, send out for yourself. If you want to go, we're going to send people if you want to go, but God already told us what was going to be. It is a land flowing with milk and honey. The people insisted. Now, if you take a look down below, down below, the list of people who went. These are the names for the tribe of Reuben, Shemua the son of Zucker, the Simeon of Judah, Issachar, Ephraim, Benjamin, Zebulon, Joseph, Dan, all of these people. Take a drink. I'm all out of drinky stuff. Hang on a second. What was that? Sure, why not? No, I just have water. It's kind of cool. I was a little dehydrated from my golf today. So anyway, if you take a look at the list of people that are listed on here, and you go back to Parsha Nasa, cousin, DJ, COUSIN, cousin, okay? See you, DJ. Say hi to the family. Hey, I'm a teacher. I'm supposed to do that sort of stuff, DJ. Okay? It's COUSIN, cousin. And your uncle. UNKLE, uncle. DJ, have a good week. Okay? Have a good week. See you next Tuesday, I hope. That's a good one. Okay, here's an interesting compare and contrast. Here's a little homework assignment for everybody. Take a look at this list that I have up there and compare it. Ooh, I'm going to drop water on me. Hang on a second. I think it's on chapter 7, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, thanks. Okay. It was chapter 7. Okay. Compare the list. Here's your homework assignment, one and all. Take a look at the list on Numbers. Chapter 7 with the list of players and the order on chapter 13. I know a lot of you enjoy doing that because you like the whole compare and contrast thing, which is kind of cool. But what you're going to discover is the ones who brought the offerings in chapter 7. Oh, how cool is that? Thank you. Wow. You are good to me. Okay. If you take a look, again, if you take a look at what is in chapter 7 and the list of the people who brought their offerings to the tabernacle, the righteous person, who's the person who stepped into the Red Sea first and parted it, was Nachshon ben Amminadab. And he was from the tribe of Judah. If you look at verse 4 here, these are the names for the tribe of Reuben, Shammua the son of Zakur, the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat the son of Hori, from the tribe of Judah, Caleb the son of... Why is the order different? Why are the people different? Where's Nachshon ben Amminadab? Why is this happening the way it is? Which is a really an interesting question. And if you insist, before the end of class, I'll tell you. Okay? Now, these people went into the land, and these people were Meraglim, which is different than the spies. If you know anything about the book of Joshua, Joshua actually sent in 2 spies. He went in to check out Jericho. He sent in two spies. Okay? These weren't spies. These are tribal bigwigs. Bigwigs kind of walk around in a herd, kind of looking around like something out of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. They're kind of wandering around trying to wonder what's going on. Yeah, if you have the Stone Edition Chumash, the explanation is all in the footnotes why things, and if you have the Midrash says, and you take a look at the order of these people, the order from chapter 7, I'll just spill the beans right now, the order from chapter 7 are the people who were in the forefront of the square as it moved. Nachshon ben Amminadab was from the tribe of Judah, which was at the front, and the other two were on either side. Those were the strong tribes. If you take a look at this Torah portion, the ones who are mentioned first are the ones from the southern part, or the tribes that continue to give them a headache. The tribe of Shimon ended up with a net loss of 37,000 people at the end of 40 years. Okay? So here's what happens. They get ready to go. Well, Moses, lo and behold, he's busy, and what does he do? He needs to fortify one of the people that are going, and who did he pick? he picked Hoshua, son of Nun, and called him not Hoshua, but Yehoshua, or Joshua. Now, where do you get this extra letter? Yehoshua starts with a yud. I can't write it in Hebrew. Yehoshua. Let me see. Can I get the whiteboard up here? No, probably not. Okay. You have Yehoshua, all right? Yehoshua is a name that starts with the hey, fifth letter of the alphabet. God wanted, Moses wanted to fortify him and give him a little bit of strength. I hit F3 on the whiteboard. Really? F3. There. So I can go like this and I can write something. Really? Okay. Hoshua's name, I don't want to do that. I need a little wider one. Hoshua's name started with a hey. Okay? Hoshua, this letter is a hey. He needed to be fortified with this letter here, which is called a yud. Question is, if God gave us the, my name's in blue. If God gave us the Torah complete, where did Moses get this letter in order to fortify Hoshua's name? He can't just throw one in. There's a finite amount of letters. Moses got the law at Sinai. Moses traveled here and needed to fortify Hoshua and change his name to Yehoshua. How did he do it? And why did he do it? And where did he get the letter? Not from Hashem's name. Nope. I give you a hint. There was a person back called remember this person? For those of you who know a little bit of Hebrew, who's that? Sarai. Sarai was Moshe Rabbeinu's name. This little letter here, the Yud up there, made her name a very powerful name. And as we know, she was equivalent to a priestess. She was a very, very powerful person. A very powerful person like this cannot have a little one. Body's too strong and all that good stuff, okay? This ain't going to happen. Yet, God promised. So what God did is he plucked this, put it in Yehoshua's name. Hang on a second. And turned her name to Sarah. Okay, got that? Sarai became Sarah, which if you take a look at this, this is the first two letters of the four-letter name of God. Moshe Rabbeinu plucked this, took it, and put it in front of Yehoshua's name. Wake up, Alt. Yehoshua's name. Put it right there, took this H from his name and gave it to her. That's what happened. Took one letter out of Genesis, picked it up, dropped it down in Numbers, took the one out of Numbers, dropped it back down in Genesis, and that in our tradition is what happened. Got that? How many of you are sitting there going, I never heard this? Hold your hand up. Fascinating. And that is one. No. He just plucked it off of Sarah's name, put it right there, plucked his off of, put it there. Okay? It wasn't floating. It was there. So he had to fortify Yehoshua with what Sarah had, and Joshua had that. Okay? Yeah? Yes, very true. Got that? Everybody got that? Okay. Everybody got, hey, Chesed's in here. Okay. That's my infantile whatever. Here, I'm going to erase that. That's kind of goofy. All right. So that's what happened. So these Meraglim go in and they check out the land. Now this land had amazing resources. If you take a look and if you Google the Ministry of Tourism. In Israel. And take a look what the Ministry of Tourism has. You will see the following. It's kind of interesting. You'll see one guy here and one guy here carrying a huge bunch of grapes on a pole. Okay? This is the symbol of the Ministry of Tourism, comes right from this Torah portion. Okay? That comes right from this Torah portion. Those two guys carrying that, don't take my word for it, go Google the Israeli Minister of Tourism and take a look what the logo is. The logo is those two guys carrying a bunch of grapes. The grapes were the size of basketballs. So they brought these grapes back, and they told all the people what they had seen and what they had found, and they showed them proof that it was a land that was run by giants, etc. Scared the heck out of the people. Yeah, yes. The point is, Chesed, they were carrying this huge bunch of grapes. So anyway, they get back, they show the people get afraid because these guys did what? What did these Meraglim do? What was the sin of these tourists? What was the sin? I don't make a very good N. Sin. S-I-N. What was the sin? What was the Avera? Anybody know? Oh, rabbi's pet. That's my wifey over there. She knows. They were afraid. But what was the sin? They were afraid of the giants? Yeah, that's what they said. But what was the sin that caused them to wander for 40 years? Okay? What was the sin? They gave an evil report. Okay, you're getting close, but that's not quite what I'm looking for. Huh? Getting closer, Omar. I'm looking for a phrase that we have used before. No. If you're curious, go to Leviticus 19:6. Not lack faith. Nope. Ah, there it is. Lashon Hara. This simple act of Lashon Hara, right there, of Lashon Hara, I can't do it, rats, of Lashon Hara, ooh, can I do this? Nope, can't do it, I don't know how. Of Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is gossip, evil tongue. And it's not, we learn from this that Lashon Hara is just not necessarily towards a person. These people did. No. It was gossip mongering, Omar, is the English for what Lashon Hara is. Lashon is a tongue or a scale. Okay? Okay? This is what it is, Omar. It's a tongue or a scale. As in the scale of justice, this side is bad and this side is good. And you want it to tilt to this side because it's the good, that's Lashon. That's a good one. What they did is Lashon Hara, Ra means evil. Okay? The is Ha, the evil scale or tongue. We either can use our tongue for good and speak good things or bad things. Lashon Hara is what was done on the land. So therefore, if someone says, oh, you can't do Lashon Hara on a chunk of land, yes, you can. And what happened was, is these people were so emphatic, led by the unpleasant guys who were part of these little tourists, they put doubt in everybody's mind, and God got very upset. And what happened at the end of this? Guess what we received? We received 40 years of wandering around because of this one act of Lashon Hara. Is Lashon Hara a bad thing? Yes. Seems the effect is still there today. Look at the secular government. That's a topic of another discussion, Chesed. Topic of another discussion. But Lashon Hara is extremely dangerous. Now, actually, Omar, if you read, Omar, you're not, honestly, Omar, you're not offending. If you reread that section in Shelech Lecha and you take a look at what they said, 1327, they reported to him and said, we arrived in the land which you sent us. They went by themselves. And indeed it flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. But the people that dwells in the land are powerful, the cities are very greatly fortified, and we also saw their offsprings of the giant. Amalek dwells in the area. Don't forget, Amalek was the one who chased after us and killed the people at the end of the line. Amalek dwells in the area of the south. The Hittite, Jebusite, Amorite dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanite dwells by the sea and on the banks of the Jordan. Caleb silenced the people towards Moses and said, we shall surely ascend and conquer it, for we can surely do it. But the men who ascended with him said, and here's the point, Omar, we cannot ascend to that people, for it's too strong for us. They brought forth the children of Israel an evil report on the land that they had spied out, saying, the land through which we've passed to spy out is a land that devours its inhabitants. All the people that we saw in it were huge. There we saw the Nephilim, the sons of the giant from among the Nephilim. We were like grasshoppers in our eyes. Get that? We were grasshoppers in our eyes, and so were we in their eyes. So what's going on here? And Omar, where'd you go? Omar, these people are doing Lashon Hara. Okay? And it's not just defending them, it's going back and reading. And what you're doing, Omar, the difference between what we do with the Torah portion and what some other faiths do, Omar, is they take a phrase out of Numbers and they'll run into like Jeremiah and take a phrase out of that and tie it into their Bible and have a whole teaching on that rather than reading what the entire Torah portion says. Okay? Got that? It's a little different way of looking at it and what they did. Okay? And what this is, Omar, it's a marvelous learning opportunity for us, and this is the reason why I do it. Now, in this portion, Caleb is shouted down, Yeshua is shouted down, God gets upset, and the problem is, we just came from Mount Sinai. God says we're going to a land filled with milk and honey. God just fought a 10-month war for us in Egypt. You think he can't fight a war in a land we're going to? I just had this conversation earlier today. why are we sending these Miraglim in? What was up with that? Look what it cost us. It cost the lives of all the men that came out of Egypt, in case you didn't know. This act of what the Miraglim did cost the lives of every single man, underline the word man, that came out of Egypt. Okay? For the next 40 years, the generation of the wilderness, of the desert as they call it, all died. Exactly, except Caleb and Joshua, because we know that Joshua led us into the land. But all the other men had died during the next 40 years. And this is one of the things between the 9th of Av, the 9th of the month of Av, through the 15th of the month of Av is a very auspicious time. This is after the fast of Av. Okay? From here to here. What happened was, is we again, 40 years from now, ended up outside the land, and what the men had done for the last year in the wilderness is the men dug a hole. The men climbed into the hole and went to sleep. And the men that died overnight, they simply filled in the hole. And so what happened was, on the 9th of Av, no men, nobody died. And they kind of looked around, and the next day, the 10th, they got up, nobody was dead. The 11th, the 12th, the 13th, and nobody died. And what the tradition says is, on the 15th of Av, we realized that all the generation of males that were at the sin of the spies had all died, and that there were no more to die. Okay? And so these are the people who were going into the land. Now, if you notice, I said men and not women. Ladies, you didn't get involved with the sin of the golden calf. You didn't get involved with the sin of Baal Peor. You didn't get involved in the sin of the Miraglim. So, ladies, this particular punishment of 40 years didn't affect you other than you looking at your husband and giving him a zets in the cup and saying, look, would you finally just believe these people and do the right thing? So, ladies, you made it. We didn't. Okay? So, if you think, you know, that women in Yiddishkeit are second-class citizens, they're not, because most men understand what women do to keep our sorry tushies out of trouble. So, if Pam will call up the Adi Ron movie again, I greatly appreciate it. And my name's in blue, that's kind of cool. And I do want to thank everybody for coming in. Hopefully that gave you a little insight into the Torah portion. I would really hope that you would take a look at it. And as my wife just, how'd she do that? Well, she's a fast typist. Next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Omar, it's my honor. I want to let everybody in here know that it's my honor, and I love doing this class. So they're going to do Adi Ron. When Adi Ron pops up with Atah Kadosh, I'm going to jump off here, listen to it, and I want to thank everybody for coming in. I will see you next week, Bleenator. I will be here. So as soon as this song comes up, I did. Uh-oh, I did it again. It's my favorite part, too, as if you couldn't tell. I cannot get this. What do I do? Yeah. I'm in the browser. I have to hit like F3 or something like that in the browser. Like that. Oh, okay, I'm off.